Parishman, O King Prachini Barhisat, Dishtakaranaha, the order carriers of death, Prajvara, with Prajvara, Kalakanyabhyam, and with Kalakanya, Vicheruhu, traveled, Avanim, on earth, Imam, this. Translation. The great sage Narada continued, My dear king, Prachini Barishat, afterward, the king of the Yavanas, whose name is Fear Itself, as well as Prajvara, Kalakanya, and his soldiers, began to travel all over the world. You say after me, the great sage Narada continued, My dear king, Prachini Barishat, afterward, the king of the Yavanas, whose name is Fear Itself, as well as Prajvara, Kalakanya, and his soldiers, began to travel all over the world. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The period of life just prior to death is certainly very dangerous because usually at this time people are attacked by the weakness of old age as well as many kinds of disease. The diseases that attack the body are compared here to soldiers. The soldiers are not ordinary soldiers, for they are guided by the king of the Yavanas, who acts as their commander-in-chief. The word Dishtakaranaha indicates that he is their commander. When a man is young, he does not care for old age, but enjoys sex to the best of his satisfaction, not knowing that at the end of life, his sexual indulgence will bring on various diseases, which so much disturb the body that one will pray for immediate death. The more one enjoys sex during youth, the more he suffers in old age. So the translation again, the great sage Narada continued, My dear king, Prachini Barishat, afterwards the king of the Yavanas, whose name is Fear Itself, as well as Prajvara, Kalakanya, and his soldiers began to travel all over the world. Here is some knowledge, some useful information. The more one enjoys sex during youth, the more he suffers in old age. So this is not generally well known. But actually, it is a principle of Ayurvedic medicine that this is the case. That semina is one of the vital elements of the body, not just male bodies either, it's in female bodies. This is also unknown, maybe, I don't know. And when there is excessive sex in youth, then it actually causes a weakening of the whole bodily constitution, so that the pangs of old age will be there because of this sex indulgence in youth. It says, at the end of life, when a man is young, he does not care for old age. They think it never comes. They think it's other people. They see old people suffering. They do not think that this is my future. It's part of the illusion of youth, as it thinks it goes on forever. But enjoy sex to the best of his satisfaction, not knowing that at the end of life, his sexual indulgence will bring on various diseases, which so much disturb the body that one will pray for immediate death. The more one enjoys sex during youth, the more he suffers in old age. So, of course, this knowledge pertains to social policy. How much money is being spent? This is a big subject for debate. The medical care of elderly people, because it's felt that society has some obligation to still to protect old people. So old age is there, and it's a huge cost, which must be borne by those who are still young. It's thought that right now, for example, that the population of the United States is becoming old. There was a baby boom after the war, and now, in a few years, those people will be the elderly people, and there are fewer young people. Yet these young people will have to support the elderly people, people who are looking ahead. As this bulge in the age population moves up, they can foresee that in 20 years, the whole health services of the country are going to be overburdened. Because typically, old people suffer a lot, and by the sides of their beds, there's a small forest of pill bottles. They're taking 8, 9 different kinds of pills, something for the arthritis, something for the osteoporosis, something for the irregular heartbeat, something for the pancreatic or diabetic insufficient, so on, so on, so on. It goes on, this list. So there's a whole thing of chemicals. As it goes on, as they get struck down more and more, because this happens. Now, things begin to fall apart. The body does not repair itself as well. Anyway, this is what happens. So what the business of people should be, say, here's some knowledge. The more one enjoys sex during youth, the more he suffers in old age. People will be loath to believe this, but actually, the government should take this into account, and therefore, as a matter of social policy, should understand that the price will be paid for sex indulgence, and therefore, it is of interest. Everybody has an interest in. And fostering a system of brahmachari life. This is standard Vedic culture. Brahmachari life means no sex indulgence until you're 25 years old. So because of that, people become healthy. They remain very healthy. And they are able to live very productive lives in the old age. They aren't crippled. So actually, the fact is that brahmachari life is not advocated in Vedic literature for the purpose of, for health purposes. Neither, say, is not eating, killing and eating animals advocated for practical purposes of health. But these are side effects. These are the fringe benefits of Vedic civilization. Actually, all the fringe benefits are there. The point is that we have to be convinced about that, just as here's a fringe benefit. If you become Krishna conscious and raise your children properly and do not expose them to the structure of civilization, so that the temptations, opportunities, the exhortations to sex indulgence will be minimized. The social institutions are such that it is expected to minimize sex indulgence. Then the huge problem of what to do with so many old people who are invalided out will be solved. And it'll get worse too, because sex indulgence, of course, makes people very selfish and greedy. And what you will see is that when there are so many old people who are such a burden to the younger people, not much appreciated, then the question of euthanasia will start to be debated again. I say, well, mercy killing. Wouldn't some of the, why are we spending so much money to keep these useless people alive? That maintaining all these old people is too high a social cost. This is the expression you read, too high a social cost. Too high a social cost means it's too much, takes too much time and takes too much of our money. It's not worth it to us to take care of these old people. So we'll kill them. Doing it with babies that are not yet born, so they'll also do it with old people because of this selfishness that comes from overindulgence and sense gratification. And these people, of course, and they're so illusioned that they see we put this policy on the old people now that they don't understand that it'll be used on them when they're all so old. But anyway, the point here that I want to talk about is that when there is Krishna consciousness, automatically everything else is taken care of. And this actually has to be our conviction. That Krishna consciousness is so perfect because it is Krishna's system, that if the lives of people are dedicated to Krishna consciousness and we've solved that one problem of our relationship with Krishna, then automatically, without any extra endeavor, all other problems are automatically solved. This means that we can dedicate 100% of our effort to Krishna consciousness. We do not have to reserve anything else for our other problems. People say to us, oh, what would happen, they say, if everybody became like you? Wouldn't everything come to a stop? No, then everything would go. It's coming to a stop now. But everything would go. But all these problems, the social problems that we have, you just read, if you look at the newspaper yesterday, a couple of days ago, in the health page, another big problem is for old people, especially women, is osteoporosis, the leaching out of calcium from the bones, and therefore bones become weak, brittle, people shrink, develop humps in their backs and so on like that, osteoporosis. So, study shows that there's a certain element called boron, which prevents osteoporosis. Boron is available in vegetables. And therefore, it's discovered that when they look at populations that are vegetarians, like the Seventh-day Adventists, they have significantly lower incidence of osteoporosis because they eat sufficient vegetables and things like that, green leafy vegetables and so on. So they don't get boron and no osteoporosis. So, you know, you read things like this all the time. So these are the side effects or the fringe benefits of Krishna consciousness. So the same thing, one thing about brahmachari life is that people will not have so much disease. They'll be fit and healthy even in their old age. They won't be all bent up, crippled in so many different ways because it may be too late for many of us to have this knowledge, but at least the future generations can be spared. So the problem is, if we try to propagate this Vedic understanding that if we simply satisfy Krishna, we reconnect with Krishna, we serve him, then automatically all problems will be solved. People say, oh, this is your religion. But this is not being put forward as a religious proposal. The more one enjoys sex during earth, the more he suffers in old age. This is put forth as fact. It's knowledge. It's Veda. And it's Vedic knowledge. So this is we have to be very careful about being, co-opted by a certain way of looking at things. And that certain way of looking at things puts everything we do in this category called religion. That this is your religion. But Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada states at the very outset, is not a religion. And we cannot think of ourselves as a... Well, for tax purposes, it's all right. But that's just to fit in with their conventional ideas. Brahmins are not supposed to be taxed anyway. But what we are talking about is not religion. It's just simply about what is true. Here, I wanted to read the very beginning of this Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's, something people don't read very much, the preface. Now here's how Prabhupada begins Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, we must know the present need of human society. And that's what we're talking about. What do we need? And what is that need? Human society is no longer bound by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society. The ideals of spiritual communism, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, namely the entire energy of living beings. So what we're talking, Srimad Bhagavatam is addressed to, has to do not with this culture or that culture or this people or that people, but everybody. Not only all human beings, actually, but all living entities. The need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. What will unite everybody? What is it that will bring about oneness of all human beings? Because we're not separated anymore. It's not that people can live in their enclaves and not deal with each other and their differences. It's not like that. So what is it? There's a factor, something is needed that will unify all human beings. And he says, not even all human beings, all living beings. He says, Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need in human society. It begins, therefore, with the aphorism of Vedanta's philosophy, janmadyasya yataha, to establish the ideal of a common cause. There we go to the common cause. What is the common cause? That from which everything has its origin. Srimad Bhagavatam is interested in that. The absolute truth. That from which everything has its origin. That's just universal. That's where we begin. So we're not talking about this philosophy or that philosophy, this religion, that religion. We're talking about what is the common origin of all things. So it's about truth. Human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It has made rapid progress in the field of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. But there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels even over less important issues. There is a need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. Srimad Bhagavatam will fulfill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. In other words, it's not a religion. It's a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization. Cultural presentation. We used to say this, when I became a devotee, we used to say this all the time, Krishna consciousness is not a religion. And it's a useful thing to say. Nowadays, sometimes for public relation purposes, we don't want to be persecuted. We may say, oh, we're a religious minority. But that's just conventional speaking. But if we speak like that, we start to think like that, this is our religion. You watch out, because this vocabulary If you start using somebody else's vocabulary, pretty soon you've got their whole world picture. And their world picture is false. It's based on a mistake. I'll go back to that. I want to finish this, and then I'll go back and talk about that. So it's a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Srimad Bhagavatam should be introduced also in the schools and colleges, for it is recommended by the great student devotee Prahlad Maharaj in order to change the demonic face of society. So he says it should be introduced in all schools and colleges. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean read as a sample of Hindu scripture. It means that it should be taught the same way that electricity is taught, and physics is taught, and chemistry is taught. It's truth. It's not, the best we hope for is that somebody will read it as a scripture. What is a scripture? This is not a scripture. We say, yeah, this is our scripture, but we're lying. Because we're using this word scripture. See, every time we talk to some reporter or somebody who doesn't know what Krishna consciousness is and say, yes, this is our religion, it's a branch of Hinduism, this is our scripture, we're actually being false to what Krishna consciousness is about. And then if we say that to other people, I remember the time that I was standing next to Prabhupada at an airport, in New York airport, and I've told this story before, but there have been many reporters who had come to interview Prabhupada. And in fact, he had talked about this subject. Prabhupada was sitting, he had garlands, he couldn't see him practically for the garlands on him. And the reporters were there, and they said, why have you come to the West? And he said, I have come to give you a brain. That's what he said. He said, your society has no brain. Brahmanas, as he described Varnashram system, how there must be brahmanas. So I have come to give you a brain. So then he walked, he went walking away from to exit the airport. So he was surrounded by a whole crowd of devotees, and all of a sudden this guy comes up, running up to him, this late coming reporter, is trailed by a guy in a minicab. And they shove the camera in Prabhupada's face, put the microphone in front of his mouth, and the guy says, out of breath, can you tell us how your group differs from other Buddhists? Now, what would you say? If somebody asks us a question like that, what do you say? We say, oh no. Well, we say, we're not Buddhists, we're Hindus. If somebody said, are you a Hindu, are you a Buddhist? What you do is you don't answer his question. Because to answer his question just reinforces the mental platform on which that question is put, and it's on the wrong mental platform. If you say, yeah, anything, because anything you say is a lie, because the categories, his mental platform is false. That's what Prabhupada did. He didn't answer. He answered his question, but the guy wasn't prepared for the real answer. Prabhupada said, we have nothing to do with his Hinduism or Buddhism. He said, we are speaking the truth, and if you are truthful, you will accept it. That's preaching. It is not preaching. We say, well, yeah, actually, see, we're a bona fide religion because we're a branch of Hinduism, and so on. It's not true. And we think like that, we can't preach Krishna consciousness, because who wants to become a Hindu? I certainly don't. And that's what's happened after all these years that I've become a Hindu, gone from being a Methodist to a Hindu. What's the use? I'm still in the same bag. No, this is on the platform. We're talking about truth. We're talking about truth. Mm-hmm. So Srimad Bhagavatam, he quotes Prahlad Maharaj. So it should be introduced in the colleges and universities. Okay, it may be a long time before they're ready to accept it. But if we want to be preachers of Krishna consciousness, we have to say, this is the book of knowledge for human society. And because you don't accept it, you're simply off. You don't know what it means to be a human being. You don't know human society. This is the book of human society presented by the author of human society, the maker of human society. You put it in the category of scripture, but that's another mistake. Anyway, let's continue. Prahlad Maharaj recommends this. I'm introducing the schools of college to change the demonic face of society. Kaumara acharit prajno dharman bhagavatam niha durlabham manusham janma tajapya dhruvam artadam. This is Prahlad's advice. Disparity in human society is due to lack of principles in a godless civilization. There is God, or the Almighty One. What is his definition of God? From whom everything emanates, by whom everything is maintained, and in whom everything is merged to rest. Material science has tried to find the ultimate source of creation, and they have, very insufficiently. But they're looking. They're looking for that ultimate source. But it is a fact that there is one ultimate source of everything that be. This ultimate source is explained rationally and authoritatively in the beautiful Bhagavatam or Srimad Bhagavatam. And so on. So this is Prabhupada's contention. See. So anytime you want to actually preach, will you wait till I'm finished? Anytime you actually want to preach Krishna consciousness, you have to confront this fact that people are going to approach us with the wrong categories. If they say, are you a Hindu or is this Buddhism? If you answer their question, yes or no or whatever, you're reinforcing the false mental platform on which the question is asked. You don't want to do that. So just like Prabhupada said, we have nothing to do with this Hinduism or Buddhism. What's the reporter going to do, you see? He wants to write down, oh, they're Hindus, not Buddhists. Prabhupada's speaking the absolute truth. He never accommodated himself to the categories of reporters. He never did that. And he put the guy on the spot, and if you're truthful, you'll accept it. That was the last thing he expected, to have somebody actually put him on the spot. This you have to do. So people will think, just like, well, I confronted the problem when I gave a lecture at Bombay at the conference on the synthesis of science and religion. There were those dumb categories right away, science and religion. So I had to deal with those categories, and there was the expectation of an audience. So what do you say? Well, this is... You take the expression. Here's the expression. I wanted to start off with Bhagavad Gita, and I wanted to get to the end that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I wanted them to listen to what I had to say. But if immediately I started Bhagavad Gita and Krishna, they think, oh, this is his scripture he's quoting. So but in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a statement. Veda ischa sarva ameva vedyo, Krishna says. So let's analyze this statement. What does it mean? You can read it two different ways. By all the Vedas I am to be known. That's one translation. When it says that, what do we think? Well, what are the Vedas? Well, the Vedas, they're a particular kind of books called scriptures. And the scriptures of a particular religion called Hinduism. So that the proposition, by all the Vedas I am to be known, means that all the Vedas are pointing to Krishna. Well, that may be an interesting topic for some scholar of religion to explore to see whether or not the Vedas do actually indicate Krishna or not. Right? That's one category. Or the other way you can say, you can read it this way. By all processes of knowledge, I am to be known. Or all knowledge is just a searching out of me. Or, even more pointedly, you can say, all science is just a searching after me, because the word science, just me, comes from the Latin word to know. One of them. Right? So all science is just a searching after me. So here from this one statement, you see, that's a much more interesting proposal. Does all science, does all knowledge seek for Krishna? But that's what we're saying. When Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, did he think he was speaking a scripture of the Hindu religion? Is that what was going on in his mind and in Arjuna's mind, that yes, what we're reproducing here is a Hindu religious scripture? No. Krishna was explaining to our, from his own point of view, what was the truth. And it was interesting because it wasn't about Hinduism. It was about truth. It was about being a human being. It was about being in the world. It was about relationship to the absolute truth. And Arjuna is accepting it that way. This is real. This is true. It's not some religion, you see, because the problem is, you see, when we get a text like Bhagavad Gita, already it's thought of as a religious scripture. See, and that means that what have you bought? Well, you've bought a vocabulary which takes this idea of religion and sees religion, behind it is the idea that here's my life, that I go on, and here this extra, this addendum, this little thing on the side to my life, that is my religion. Here's my life, and over here's my religion. See, now this split is a historical accident. It's a product of a certain history which people call secularization. It's something that happened in Europe, I guess, be it 17th and 18th century, called secularization. And we're all modern world is a product of secularization. And that is to split the world in two. Because before that time, there was no idea, just like there's no idea in the Vedas, that religion is something you do that's extra. That's your addendum. That here's human life and over here is your religion. It's not that way. What's our word? What's our word that's translated as religion? Dharma. And that means something, that by which a thing is what it is. Dharma is your essence. It's your life. The dharma of sugar is to be sweet. The dharma of fire is to give off light. What's the dharma of a human being? To be a Methodist? To be a Hindu? No. It's inseparable quality. It's not some extra that's added on to human life. So immediately when people see Bhagavad Gita, so they're in discussions with them, they'll come forward with these categories, religion, scripture, which immediately takes this and puts it in a certain category. It's a scripture. That means it doesn't really concern truth. It concerns belief. Here is knowledge. And what does that mean? Well, what we find out by our senses in our give and take with the material world. That we call knowledge. Everything aside from that, learned by some traditional authority, that is religion. But we're saying, no, this is knowledge. That's faith. That's belief. Is no, but they made this difference. And so we have to break that down. We're not talking about some Hindu religious scripture. But secular society means, yes, in the schools and so on, this can't be taught as truth because those are all scriptures. Well, what's the truth? Well, that's this other thing. That's biology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, sociology, history, but not this. This is scripture. That's the way they've divided it up. And it immediately puts you in a position where you can't preach the truth. You start talking about transmigration of the soul and somebody has got in their mind that you're telling them about Hinduism, you're not talking to them. We're not talking to them. And the worst thing that happened is we lose our own powers of preaching and even conviction if we fall victim to this idea that this is some Hindu Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam is some Hindu religious scripture. It's not about Hinduism, it's about human life. If we accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he's not a Hindu god, I mean, and I've heard devotees do that. Yes, Krishna's agreed to this proposal when trying to, you know, relate to somebody or do some public relations. Public relations is sometimes the way people do public relations is just that. Let us fit ourselves into their categories and be accepted. But our business is not to conform to them. Our business is to have them conform to us. Because what we're talking about is the truth. If we conform to them and we, you know, see ourselves as, you know, minority religion, we've sold out. We've been co-opted. This place is full of minority religions. It may help us get along, but it won't succeed in the mission of the acharyas, which is to transform the face of human society. We don't want to be accepted. Well, let me put it this way. For the time being, or you preach like that, but that's a little diplomatic. Sometimes you can be a little diplomatic. But our real business is world transformation, not to adapt to a world, but to transform that world. This is what Prabhupada says Srimad Bhagavatam is for. To change the face of human society. Human society as it exists now is a deviation. Whatever we know that's been going on for even like the past 300 years in Europe is a deviation. They don't know how to do anything. They don't even know how to pass stool. They've lost everything. They're so far gone. Now, I'll tell you something about this. There is a man who did a doctoral dissertation on the American bathroom. And he looked through peepholes. He went to doctors, he examined corpses and anatomies, and he concluded that the proper way to pass stool is the way, in fact, that the whole human race has been doing it up until about 100 years ago. The genuine Vedic way. People squat. And so, you know, just to use an example, sorry. But it's very striking that here some guy has to go and do a doctoral dissertation, you know, on this subject to find out that what everybody's doing is wrong. They get hemorrhoids, you know, that's the way the body is made. That's the way you're supposed to do it. Which is what Prabhupada said all along. We've been accused, by the way, since we're on the topic, we've been accused, by the way, of forcing people or making people to pass stool in a different manner, as part of the technique of brainwashing and mind control. That's right. Oh yeah. It's been brought up very seriously. You know, this is like another technique to alienate people and to bring, you know, that you really get down to the very details of their life. You don't control everything, like even this, so that they're really in your grips. They can't conceive that what they're doing is simply wrong. They're so out of it. They're so out of it, they don't even know how to pass stool. If you don't know that, what do you know? I'll tell you, nothing. They don't know how to defecate. They don't know how to eat. They don't know how to stay clean. Prabhupada had to teach us the very basics of human society. How to eat. How to defecate. How to sleep. I mean, all these things are there. Even up to this, how not to suffer in old age. So this is not about religion. This is about life. This is how you live. We don't pass stool in some different way because it's our religion. So this is about human life. And you just have to understand that the whole human society is off. So they've done this thing before this so-called secularization. Universal people did not separate their religion from their life. They didn't separate that. They didn't live in one style of architecture and worship in another. And you do now, people live in modern houses and go to Gothic churches and stuff like that. You know, they haven't done such a thing. It was just life. So this is a modern thing. Secularization means that people can be very religious. This is the American deal. This is the deal America has made. We'll let you be as religious as you want. You can be as cornball far out as you want to be, but you keep it in its place. You don't intrude it into the school system. You don't intrude it into the things that really matter. What are the things that really matter? The exercise of power, the making of money, politics. Well, mostly money, I guess. Everything follows from that. So you'll see that's what's called secularization, that spiritual ideas, or so-called religious ideas, they don't affect what goes on in the Congress, in the courts, on Wall Street, so you get people like these many people in the born again Christians are engineers. You know, so they can be like really, total born again Christians, and really into it, be creationists and all that stuff. And then for work, they go and they'll sit in a factory and design cruise missiles and everything, go through all the engineering, completely scientific and rational, and just go back and forth one to another, just move between two different worlds. They don't have anything to do with each other. They keep them apart. This is the deal that America makes. You can have your religion, just don't intrude it on the public arena. That the things that really make things like running a city, running a country, how wealth is made, how wealth is distributed, who gets it, who doesn't get it, anything doing public policies, those things we keep out. You know? Of course, you see, that's the whole thing that people are freaked out now about, Pat Robertson or moral majorities. They want to break that deal up. They want to break up that deal, and that's been made. The understanding is there. We cannot fall victim to this notion. When we think, anybody who looks at the Bhagavad Gita and says, "Oh, this is a Hindu scripture," immediately that person doesn't understand what that book is. He's already thinking in categories that didn't exist when the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And has nothing to do with it. So this idea of religion and Hinduism, all these things, really, it was a big thing because one time we had a bunch of people who were trying to convince America, yeah, we're Hindus, so therefore you should tolerate us. And it's a little disturbing because not only are we not Hindus, we're not even a religion. We're just speaking the truth. What Prabhupada said, I am speaking the truth, and if you are truthful, you'll accept it. And that's the only way that people will become devotees, when they're convinced this is the truth. It applies to them. We are not trying, another thing we're doing is we're not trying to make converts to our religion. See, people would say, because you talk to reporters and media, when you go out, you're trying to make converts to your religion. And if you say, yeah, because you know what activity they're describing. We're preaching Krishna consciousness. No, we're not trying to make, you should say, no, we're not trying to make converts to our religion. We're trying to convince people to return to being human beings. That's what should be said. But if we're lazy, we start thinking like this, and then we've relativitized Krishna consciousness, and we've actually lost it. So it's a salutary error so often to go back and read this preface of Srila Prabhupada's. And so we should understand, this Srimad Bhagavatam should be in the colleges and universities. It should be a matter of public health policy. I'm sorry, the people of the United States do not want to pay for so many diseases in old age. Brahmachari should be enforced as much as possible by social institutions and by law. Or if not brahmachari, at least compulsory marriage. Either one or the other. But no more messing around. You want to cram this down. You can't cram policies like this down the throat of an unwilling populace. There'll be a massive uprising. Therefore.